Are you ready to become a better version of yourself, to become a leader in your personal and professional life? Then welcome to the CJ Evolution Podcast, where we put a twist on traditional criminal justice professions and provide you with the tools you need to set yourself up for success in your career and for the future. Now, welcome your host, the CJ Evolutionist himself, Patrick Fitzgibbons.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Episode 243 of this great and growing podcast, growing because of you, the listener and supporter, Patrick here, host and creator of this great show. Thank you for tuning in. I love that intro music. I know you got many options out there, but thank you for spending a little bit of your valuable time with me. I sure do appreciate it. Special thanks to all those brave men and women out there working in the criminal justice field, whatever you were doing, wherever you are at. Thank you for tuning in. If you're a longtime listener, welcome back. If you're a first-time listener, we hope you stick around. Welcome. We love you. Thank you for tuning in. We hope you stick around and enjoy the great guests, great content. Special thanks to all those people out there buying Four Sigmatic coffee. You know, I'm a big fan of this great coffee. You're going to love the mushroom coffee. It doesn't taste like mushrooms, but if you head over to cjevolution.com, you're going to see a link to Four Sigmatic. Trust me, folks, you're going to love these products. They have coffees, elixirs, mochas. Four Sigmatic is an amazing company. You're going to get 15% off your purchases using the promo code CJEVO. You know, folks, I remember the many years I was on patrol. Every once in a while, I would make an arrest, and that person I was arresting, that individual, would actually take responsibility for his or her actions. They would actually say, you know what? I'm in the predicament I am in because of my actions. I take full responsibility. And I was like, wow. But unfortunately, as we all know, that doesn't happen. It's not the norm. Many times people are blaming everybody but themselves for the problems they are now enduring. My next guest got in trouble in my own backyard in Boulder, Colorado, not too far from where I'm at. Not so long ago, he defrauded a lot of people out of a lot of money. He got arrested, did some time, incarcerated, and now he's doing the right thing because he took responsibility for his actions. He's still paying for his crimes, but he's on the right path. And so much of it is saying, you know what? I screwed up. I take responsibility. He's an author. He's a podcaster. I hope you enjoy this show. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. I'm very excited to have Greg Kotsaftis on the show. He's an expert truth speaker. He's a former prisoner, and he's a successful author. Greg, are you there, sir?
I am.
Well, thank you for being on the show. You have an amazing story, and I don't know if I gave you due justice with that intro, Greg. Do you want to fill in the gaps?
Sure, sure. Well, first of all, thank you for having me on.
Of course.
Yeah, you know, as you know, I owned and operated a business down in Boulder, Colorado for 14 years. And after the economic downturn of 2008, I couldn't let go. I held on. I kept trying to sustain myself. But unfortunately, I broke into habits of lying and deceiving people and eventually fell way behind, robbing Peter to pay Paul. And My business was failing, and rather than file bankruptcy, I kept thinking it was somehow going to fix itself, or I could fix it, because, you know, it was my baby. I started it with 10 grand, and in 2006, I broke 10 million in sales, so I was, you know, doing pretty well. I was living in Boulder in the community, and got a family there and everything else, and I was just really, really pushing hard, but unfortunately, I lost sight of how my actions affected people, specifically my customers who trusted me. And, you know, I betrayed their trust, which is something at the time I didn't see, but obviously it caught up to me, and I eventually got charged and sentenced to 6 years in the Department of Corrections and 20 years probation until I paid the money back, which is what I'm doing at this present time.
Well, you know, props to you, Greg, because it takes a lot of courage. I know you've been on other talk shows and you're really successful now, but it takes a special kind of person to you know, get out there in front of people and say, look, I messed up. So, you know, I mean, I give you props for that. And you know, I think the stereotype out there with a lot of people is, you know, okay, this guy, Greg, he must have grown up in a crappy family, but you actually grew up in a middle-class suburban community by a loving family, right?
Yes, in Massachusetts, that's where I'm from. And no, absolutely right. You know, no one has criminal history in my family except for me. Mm-hmm. If you were to ask anybody, you know, 15 years ago, if it was going to be me, everybody would be like, yeah, right. It's not going to happen. But no, I mean, my parents are both hardworking, loving, caring people. They're still married. They've been married over 50 years. I had a few slight negative influences from family, you know, outside family members, but I have my brother and my sister are great people. You know, my sister's an elected official in our hometown, and it's, it's really, I'm not your stereotypical, felon, I think, I guess in that sense, from the path, I should say.
Now, dumb question, but I mean, so what did your family do, when they heard this news that you were, you know, you were arrested and you're facing all these charges? What was their reaction?
Well, you know, my mother's very devout Catholic, strong religious woman. You know, she was immediately in my face trying to figure out, to get a best attorney to help me, to help me figure it out. But my father kind of went into denial mode. People really didn't know what to do with it, you know, because it's not something you experience. And they, you know, honestly, I think they felt that, yeah, he made a mistake, but, you know, he's not going to go to jail. Mm-hmm. That's not going to happen, right? And my sister kind of cut me off completely because there was a lot of backlash because she still lives in the town where we grew up.
And she's the public official, right, Greg?
Well, she is now. Okay. But she wasn't at that time, but she's always been very actively involved in the town I grew up in. So she knows, like, you have to understand this is a kind of community where everybody I went to high school, not everybody, but I'll give a solid 60 to 70% still live in that community. Mm-hmm. They all had children and the cycle kind of continues. And my sister's part of that whole loop. So when I committed these crimes and got blown up all over the internet, my shame was reflected upon her. Mm-hmm. So she kind of withdrew from me for a while. My brother, same type of situation, but he was a little bit more involved to help. So yeah, that's kind of it. You know, my family, as much as they were loving and caring and good, honest people, the main saying, and this is in my book, is that don't worry, you'll figure it out. Mm-hmm. Anytime I had a problem, it was like, you know, here's some advice, or maybe you should do this, or we need to find you someone to help you. He's like, oh, don't worry, you'll figure it out. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's the way I was kind of raised.
So I know you did 2 years in Colorado DOC.
I did 14 months.
14 months.
At Camp George West,
okay.
Which I don't know if you're familiar with
Golden.
Yeah, it's completely minimum facility. I was out in the community putting furniture together at different various state offices all over Denver. So I'm not going to say it was easy, but it was by no means the big, ugly prison that you see when you...
But you still had your freedom restricted. And you still, you know, obviously, you know, you couldn't do what you wanted.
Right. It was still tough. But it could have been worse. Let's put it that way, especially after the stories I've heard from other inmates when I was in there. So
now, how did, again, another dumb question, Greg, I apologize. I mean, how did time in prison affect you? I mean, it affects everybody, obviously, but how did it affect you as a person? Obviously, you had time to reflect.
It's interesting for me, and a lot of people don't get it, but the minute I hit, Boulder County Jail. Okay. The first night I'm looking around, I'm like, okay, you know, I never got sad. I never got depressed. I got pissed. And I'm like, you know, okay, your three daughters, cause I have three kids are out there now. Their lives are destroyed. You know, you've destroyed the lives of many, many people. And you know, what are you going to do about it? You're going to sit here and wallow in pity, or you're just going to get motivated. So I started writing letters. I wrote letters to everybody all my family members immediately when I was at Boulder County for a couple of weeks. And then I proceeded to, you know, I went to the Department of Corrections Processing Center down in Denver. Mm-hmm. And they do a lot of testing there to you know, they test your IQ and all these various things. And I made it a point to really excel and to try to do the best I possibly could because I felt that, you know, I can't just sit back and, because most guys just don't even care, right? Mm-hmm. You take your IQ test and the guys just don't even fill the paper out because they're like, what the hell's the point? Mm-hmm. But I didn't realize it at the time, but that helped lower my risk score. And my risk score coming out of DOC was the lowest it could possibly be. Hence the reason I ended up at Camp George West and not someplace way down on the southern slope where I never would have seen my kids, mm-hmm. right? I mean, it was a blessing that I ended up there. So I really took the opportunity immediately to get focused and try to do everything right, do everything as you know, organized as possible. And when I got to Camp George West, I was very fortunate to have, even though she's my ex-wife, she brought my children to see me often. I had a very good friend that came to see me almost every weekend. Mm-hmm. And I have a very good friend that I work for now that the first phone call with him, he's like, okay, I'm on Amazon. How many books do you want? And sent me like 15 books to read. I read like 100 books wow. within a year. So I really started to get educated and learn and mm-hmm. reflect upon what my, you know, the judge, when she sentenced me, said to me, you know, your ego. And I never even, you know, I knew what ego was, right? But I never yeah. really thought about it. She's like, sure. your ego drove you to do these things. And those words kind of ate at me. So yeah. I kind of really analyzed, okay, do you have some crazy ego? Or are you a, you know, a sociopath? What's your problem? You know, and then I just kind of dug in and looked at the ugly, but I had a very strict routine. Every day that I was there, everything was the same. And I stuck to that routine.
Yeah.
Vigilantly. That's how yeah. I got through it.
Well, it sounds like, I mean, you screwed up. You made mistakes, Greg. You paid for them. But you had, I mean, the fact that your ex-wife is bringing your kids there says a lot to me. And the fact that mm-hmm. people were still connected to you and they were sending you, you know, like you mentioned, you know, your friend sending you books. I mean, that's huge. A lot of people don't have that. So you had a good foundation. You just kind of went astray, like you've said, and you kind of made some bad choices. But a lot of people don't have that.
No. I mean, I'll say 90% of the inmates I met in there don't have that.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the food there obviously is horrible, and it just, I'm a very healthy person.
Yeah.
There was like no sign of anything that's with protein in it. And they had these salmon packets that I used to make, you know, cold salmon that I just eat out of the bag. So I call my same buddy with the books, and he's like, okay, how much salmon do you need? You know, because he knows. I mean,
well, he knew you're a healthy guy, so he's like,
it's loaded with omega-3s. I mean, it's stuff that's important. It's little things, though, that people don't get, right?
Yeah.
And that's why I think the recidivism rate is so high and why these guys fail. I mean, I met many guys that just didn't leave because yeah. they could have left.
Well, they're institutionalized. Like, you know that. I mean, they're probably better off there. I hate to say it than being off. You know, out of prison.
Well, they don't have any place to go.
No.
And they don't have the. You know, every day. You know what? They had mail call at night, right? And they would call me down like after mail call because I have a box of books.
Yeah.
And then I'd be carrying the books back, and guys would see me with the books. They'd be like, "Oh, can I have a book?" And I'd be like, "You can't, because that's considered bartering.
Yeah.
So that's against the rules."
Yeah.
But, you know, just seeing all the support I had, and, you know, and there's guys that literally would sit by the visiting area because it was outside, and they would never have a guest, but they would just sit there and watch people come and go because they had no connection,
yeah.
you know, with any kind of support. So yeah. it's definitely tough for a lot of people, for sure.
So you went from making millions of dollars mm-hmm. to losing your freedom. Now, what did you learn from that experience of one day you're out there, you're making a ton of money? Not that everything's about money, but you know, you have your freedom, to losing your freedom and being told where to go, what to do, what to wear 24 hours a day.
You know, it's funny. Well, what I've learned is I'll never go back. Mm-hmm. I have no desire. You know, I stepped out of prison. You know, my wife was amicable, but she sold every flipping thing we had mm-hmm. in my big, beautiful house in Boulder, which she sold as well. I had two black duffel bags and a bike. That's it. Mm-hmm. Those are all my possessions. And I looked at this and I'm like, you know what? Okay. And I've, to this day, may have a few more things, but otherwise I have no desire, because I, you know, that doesn't drive me. It doesn't make me happy. So what I learned was obviously that money isn't everything. I also mm-hmm. learned that being a slave to money, meaning if you're making that kind of money and you're leading that kind of life, guess what? You got to feed the beast every day. And I fed the beast by being a thief. Yeah. I fed the beast by not being honest. So yeah. I just don't want the beast in the room anymore.
I don't know if you've ever heard this, and maybe this is ridiculous to say, but it just makes me think of, I don't know if you've ever seen The Wolf of Wall Street.
Oh, yeah.
In Jordan Balfour, I mean, where he made millions of dollars and greed just got the best of him.
Right. No, you know, I follow him a little bit online. It amazes me, though, that what he got 10 years. He got 10 years.
Yeah, yeah.
43 million. I can't remember what the number was. Yeah. But, you know, he's out there doing his thing now. I don't know what that is. I don't know if he's paying people back or not. But
well, I think he is. And I think he's doing, you know, he's doing consulting and he's out there, you know, telling people. And I haven't followed him in a while, but the last I checked and to see what he was doing, he was out there consulting and he was kind of advising people and he was kind of, you know, doing what you're doing a little bit, saying, you know, hey, I screwed up and I'm trying to make amends, but, you know, talking to people about it.
Right.
How did you mentioned, I mean, nobody wants the label of felon. I mean, how did you learn to cope with the stress of being a felon? Because you just got to, put that on in everything, Greg, you know that. I mean, how did you cope with that? Because a lot of people couldn't and they don't.
You know, it sucks. Yeah. I'm engaged now. The woman I'm engaged to, I told her on the second date, and trust me, there were plenty of women before that. That was my rule, right? My rule was, okay, first date, we're getting to know each other. Second date, if I'm going to see you again, I tell them, right? And a lot of them are like, yeah, I'm sorry, but this just isn't going to work out, or, you know, whatever the reason was. She accepted me right away, said it's okay, I still like you. You know, we continued to date and things worked out, but the only way to get past that felon tag is just to own it. Mm-hmm. I mean, you got to own it, and you've got to be prepared to take the heat, and you got to be prepared for the fact that some people are not going to want to talk to you at all, which is okay. But it sucks. I understand why they have it. You know, they want to protect the public, but at the same time, I do think it's a little excessive, especially with Google nowadays and the way you're portrayed by the media, you know, which is still a battle. But for me personally, I'm over that now. It's been 6 or 7 years, but I will say this, getting a job was an absolute nightmare.
Yeah.
40, 50 interviews. Right after I got out, I went to the halfway house. Mm-hmm. I went to a friend of mine who got my stuff and I said, listen, I want to go to real estate school. And because I needed to make as much money as possible to pay everybody back. Mm-hmm. I went through real estate school. I passed the test on the first go round. I got hired by Keller Williams downtown. Everybody knows my story. Nobody's blinking. And I get in front of the real estate commission and they're like, well, you're a felon. We can't give you your license, even though they've given it to other people. And the reasoning was, is because you owe too much money.
Well, isn't that the whole purpose, like you said, to get into real estate, to pay back restitution?
I actually appealed it and spoke in front of the board. And I said, there's a guy here like owning what he did.
Exactly. I mean, you're owning it.
And I don't touch money. In a real estate transaction, you don't touch money.
No.
It's all handled by the title company. I said, I can't think of a better situation. Of course, they said no. And then once I told the probation officer at Boulder County, you know, she flipped out. She's like, what the hell are you thinking? You can't do that. And I'm like, what am I supposed to do? Like, just kick back and make 30, 40 grand a year for the next 20 years and no one ever gets paid? I just don't get it. So,
yeah, because you're ordered to pay restitution and... Yeah, I mean, I think it's admirable, Greg. I know you hear this, but you know, a lot of people, and you've run across them when you were incarcerated, that don't take responsibility for anything. And I'm not condoning what you did. I mean, it was a bad thing. You admitted to it, but admitting to it and owning up to things is, I mean, that's the majority of it, right? I mean, I mean, a lot of people say, "Screw it, I didn't do anything wrong." You know, I was framed or whatever. I mean, you're owning up.
Oh yeah, no, I mean, it's funny because I've had. This isn't funny, but I've had 5 different probation officers in 4 years. Mm-hmm. So 5 new people to meet, 5 new people to go through. And a couple of them have told me various stories of similar criminals to myself that have, you know, stolen $1 million or whatever. And I never once blinked that, you know, hey, I made a mistake. I'm just out here doing the best I can and trying to pay everybody back. And I pay a very substantial amount every month. I work hard at it. And they've all said the same thing that you just said, that you won't believe how many people come in my office and they look at me like they're like, oh, I want a travel permit to go see my daughter's wedding. And I'll look at them and say, well, you haven't paid, you've been late on your restitution payment. Well, it's not my fault. I shouldn't have to pay that anyway. You know what I mean? I don't know how people could ever have that mindset because.
Well, how does it keep you going, man? I mean, because that's what I want to know. And again, you're owning up to it. You screwed up. You're trying to pay back your debt. How does it keep you going when you keep getting slammed?
Oh, I have faith. I'm very competitive and I don't, none of it matters to me. Like, I honestly know, I truly know, I don't think I know, that if I keep on my path, you know, doing stuff like this, talking on a podcast, writing a book, which, you know, every dime of my book goes towards my victims, just trying to do the right thing every day and teach others, teach my children that I'm, you know, a changed man and that I want the second half of my life to mean something. That's what matters. I mean, people can call me names and do whatever, you know, different probation officers can throw down new rules. It doesn't matter anymore. Because I just keep doing what I'm doing. Eventually, something's going to break. That's how I feel.
Well, and it's so, you know, I mean, I it's amazing to me that you can, you know, have this. And so much of you know, getting through things, Greg, you know, is about mindset. And you just have that right mindset. I mean, you can't give up. And perseverance and persevere will win in the end. And it just amazes me how you can't. I mean, I'm sure you have your bad days too, where you're like, "Screw this shit, I'm not going to do it anymore." You know, and then you're like, "No, I can't. I got a family. I got to keep going." And it just amazes me how you're like, "Screw it," like majority of people out there, and just become bitter and cynical.
No, I mean, I started speaking at Camp George West. They had a group called the Prisoners Against Crime Team, which I applied for and got accepted, and eventually ended up running it. Well, we went out and spoke to troubled youth in Denver. We went and spoke at DU. I'm very active in doing that. I've been accepted by, I was accepted by Defy Ventures to go speak in prisons here in Colorado, but unfortunately the wardens won't let me go because I'm still on paper. Then I got accepted to speak in California at Kern Valley State Prison and California Correctional Institute, which I'm hoping to do in March. So I, you know, and my story is just, you know, you're going to look at me like, why the hell are you here? You know, it's, I'm not your typical guy, but you just got to own it. You got to keep giving back. And it doesn't, I don't know why it hasn't really bothered me. I mean, you know, it's been hard, but you know, I'm out here, you know, I get to eat real food every day. I get to go to the gym and work out.
Well, I imagine how you were brought up and who you surrounded yourself with. You know, for most of your life, you had some strong influences in your life. I mean, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, I didn't have a lot of strong male figures in my life. My dad was a nice person, but he wasn't this authoritarian, like, what the fuck are you doing person. Like, you know, he wasn't like, this is, you're an idiot, or I can't believe you did this. There was never any of that kind of talk. I wish I had that, because I honestly know I probably never would have gotten in trouble. I really surround myself now with, I've got 4 or 5 really good friends that are all stuck with me through this whole mess. And man, to say that they're like easy on me is not even close. If they think for a second that I'm doing something that may or may not be honest, they have no problem calling me on it.
Hey, and that's good. You need that. Everybody needs that. Not just you, but everybody needs that. And I would go as far as to say, and maybe it didn't happen to you, Greg, but when you were going through your rough times and when you were losing everything in front of you, you really figured out very, very quickly who your friends were and who your, you know, people didn't care about you, right? Because they probably just disappeared
you have no idea. I mean, I had this massive network of people in the neighborhood I lived in Boulder, and we had all these friends, and the minute this happened, they walked away. I mean, it was amazing to me. People I'd known for 20 years that I'd done business with, they're just like, you know, I made them millions of dollars and they were my friends. We used to travel all over the place, one specific person. And he's like, man, I just can't talk to you anymore. I was just like, whoa, you know?
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you still have people in your life that are helping you. And can you talk about your book? I know you got a book out there, The Truth About Lies. You know, it's a book about pitching the truth, right? I mean, about telling the truth.
That's a truth about lies, how admitting nothing can cost you everything. And what the book does is it kind of breaks down different aspects of my story and things that happened to me and how I reflected upon it, the things that I learned. Most importantly, it, you know, talks a lot about how my actions affected other people that I never considered. Another thing the judge said to me, who's, you know, she's now retired, but she said to me at my sentencing, she's like, you know, at the time I had like, I don't know, I think 40 victims. And she's like, you've affected hundreds of people in this community. And And, you know, at that time, I'm like shaking my head, like, what the hell are you talking about? Mm-hmm. Like denying what you said. But, you know, when you start talking about you affect one person, you end up affecting their family, their children, sure. because you're causing stress on all these different people. And that's what I think a lot of criminals don't own and don't understand. So that's one thing I talk about in my book. I talk about the power of having a solid core group of friends, like I talked about. You know, I call it my tribe. I've got my four men that I can call upon for anything, and they will always try to help me and always give me a straight answer. And just the different lessons I learned about, you know, I began meditating immediately when I was in there, and I put everything into a very solid routine up at 5:45 every day, meditate, pray, journal, go to work, exercise, write my book, walk 20 laps around the facility, go to bed, read, meditate, repeat. Every day was the same.
Now,
it's something I've carried forward. And, you know, a lot of successful people I've read about, they have that kind of routine.
Of course.
And that's why things don't seem to bother me, because I'm just so structured, and I like it that way. It makes me feel better because I know that I'm trying to do things the right way.
Well, what struck out about what you just said, I mean, it's all very compelling, but meditation, I started doing that a couple of years ago, and I'm a huge fan of meditation. And I try to get up every day pretty early, do what you do, Greg. I meditate, I journal, write down some goals. And I try to work out every day. Unfortunately, sometimes that doesn't happen all the time. But now let's talk about, you got a podcast out there. We were talking a little bit off the air, and I think you got a great story, a very compelling story, a story of hope and, you know, success. Tell us about your podcast, because I listened to one of the episodes today, and I thought it was really good.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, it's called Pitching the Truth. I just randomly decided to start it one day, and got it all fired up. I've had a few guests on there, but basically we talk about the impacts of obviously being truthful. I have a couple different various stories from outside people, a couple people that I coached, because I was a coach when I first got out from my friend's company, kind of like a life coach, reflecting upon my experiences and how I impacted a couple of them by forcing them to be honest at the time with their spouse. Yeah, and I've got my ex-jiu-jitsu instructor, Elliot Marshall, from Easton Martial Arts in Denver. I had to reach out to him, you know, and kind of, you know, because a couple of people that were at the academy were affected by my crimes, and ask him to come back and start training again, which I did about a month ago. And it was a powerful interview with him as well, because, you know, it was two guys that spent a lot of time together, and everything blew up and then kind of came back. So it's, you know, we talked a lot about men's depression, different issues like that. So I thought a lot of different subjects. I'm trying to mix it all up and get some more stuff done. But I think it's important to share experiences, especially between, you know, I honestly think that as a man, without being able to communicate how screwed I was, because I was too scared and too proud and too, you know, too much like, I don't need anybody to help me. I can do this myself.
Yes, it's a sign of weakness, right? With most men. I mean, most men are like, I don't need help. You know, I'm a guy. I don't need your help.
No, you don't have to tell me what to do. I'll take care of it myself. Right. And if I think that message of showing men that they can, you know, you have to reach out. It's more of strength to have a community and own your mistakes than it is to try to hide them. Cause in the end, as we know, the truth always comes out, and you know, sometimes the repercussions are higher than others. And I'm one of the example of high repercussions.
You've been through hell and back with what you've been going through. And again, you did it to yourself, but if you could change anything, if you could do it all over again, would you change anything? I mean, obviously you're in a better place now.
Yeah, I would have, this is a tough one, because I made a lot of decisions based on other people's wants and desires. I'm not here to point the finger at anybody, but if I had to go back and do it again, I would have, right after 2008, when I didn't sell anything for like 60 days, I spoke to a really good friend of my father's who just recently passed away, who, you know, he was running hospitals and a nonprofit, building hospitals all over the world. And I spoke to him on the phone. I thought he was going to try to help bail me out financially, because that's really what I was hoping for, right? And his words were, I want you to go downstairs. I want you to fire everybody. I want you to lock your door. I want you to put a sign on it that you're closed. And tomorrow I want you to file bankruptcy. And he's like, live to fight another day. He goes, because you're never going to win. You've got a family. You've got a wife. You need to protect them. You need to protect yourself. And I didn't listen. Yeah. Man. I didn't listen. And he was right. And eventually caught up with me.
Yeah. Well, Greg, thank you so much for coming on the show. Amazing story. We're going to have your book, your website. Oh, really quick. I want you to talk about your website and your business out there, Veracity. Can you give a couple of moments and talk about that?
Sure. It's www.veracitygp.com, like Greg Paul. It's my middle name. And, you know, I'm a public speaker. I'm trying to get that going. I'm going to be speaking at DU at the clinical psychology, forensic psychology department. They're doing a lot of work down there with criminal psychology and trying to help people when they are released from halfway houses, how to get them back into society and not have them rescind. So I'm going to be speaking at two of their different classes this next winter semester. And, you know, as my book is on there, The Truth About Lies, and my podcast as well. And that's kind of what I do. I do a little bit of coaching, but I haven't been doing much of that lately because I've been trying to focus on the other things at the moment.
Well, Greg, man, you're in the minority, man. I really appreciate you coming on the show. And what I mean by in the minority is you're one of those rare individuals out there, and I'm sure you've heard this before, we talked about it, that actually has taken responsibility for some of the actions that you've done throughout your life. And again, that's an admirable trait, man, because me being a cop for a long time, you hardly ever see that.
Well, I'm hopeful that I can convince other people to do that before they commit a crime. That's kind of my goal. And so.
Well, Greg, we wish you the much success in the future, man. And like I said, if you need any help with anything with your podcasting, you have my contact information. Please reach out to me and I'll help you.
Thank you. I appreciate that very much.
All right, Greg. Take care.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast. For more strategies for self-improvement and resources based on today's episode, be sure to head to cjevolution.com. You can also connect to Patrick directly on social media at @Pat_Fitzgibbons with any questions, comments, or concerns. We look forward to helping you find more personal success on the next episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast.